All right. So my name's Andrew Sheridan, and I'm a neuropsychologist. I'm here to talk to you today on behalf of the YACAD service, which is, let me get this right, the Youth and Adult Complex Attention Disorders Service. Bit of a mouthful. We're an adult ADHD assessment and treatment service in the public sector. I've got to give apologies on behalf of my colleague, psychiatrist, Dr. Devinder Hans. He would have loved to be here today, but at the last minute fell ill and also is looking after his daughter who's got the same illness. So apologies for that reason. And I'll do my best. He very kindly provided some material, which I'll do my best to cover, but obviously I'm not a psychiatrist. So, why did we think it would be a good idea to do this presentation? Well, we thought that because it's fairly novel to have an adult ADHD service in the public sector, that would be something that we wanted to share information about. I suppose just to kind of spread the word a little bit about that and open up a discussion about that, because I personally think it's a really important area to be involved with. And I've got my email address on the final slide, so if we hover on that for a bit, anyone who's interested can take that down. So also, I suppose a couple of things go along with that. It's important to get the approach right in terms of using the knowledge and expertise of a psychiatrist as well as a neuropsychologist. And also, I suppose we've found iteratively over time that it's also really important to get the referral criteria just right and to be a little bit sort of stubborn about that, because also this is an area where we have relatively little FTE and we need to make it quite specific in terms of who can access the service. Part of our aims for the service and modestly, I think at the moment we're achieving, is providing a period of prescribing for 12 months for those who are eligible. And again, it's sort of important to be specific about that because of the FTE. And also we're looking to see what we can do in the psychosocial treatments space as well. So I'll aim to cover that also. So a little bit of history and context. The service has been running since September 2017. I've been on board for about a year and a half. So it's funded for assessment and treatment of ADHD, but like I alluded to at the beginning, it's only for those with who satisfy specific conditions, and it's severe mental health conditions. So the aim behind that is a couple of reasons. It's to service those who are at the highest level of need, but it's also, I suppose, to make sure that there's a case management approach, because the case managers help the clients get through the process and provide us with some collateral and some support and things like that. So we are a small FTE. I'm a day and a half per week, and the psychiatrist is a day per week. And we have some administrative support as well. And we're a self-contained service, but one thing that helps us is that we're managed operationally by a service called YouthLink, which is for youths with mental health challenges more broadly. So that frees up a little bit of our time. In terms of an overview of the overall assessment process, we offer two psychiatry appointments and two neuropsychology appointments as a maximum. It normally ends up being the two on my side of things, but sometimes it's a bit quicker for psychiatry if ADHD can be ruled out quite early. And we use collateral information. So we look at school reports, ideally from primary school years, a couple of logistical challenges around that sometimes in this population, and also we look at the diagnostic interview, ideally with a parent. Again, sometimes some challenges around that, but ideally someone who's known them for a very long time. So perhaps a sibling is appropriate as well. So after team discussion, we have a feedback process. We like to involve the case manager in that, and also a carer, partner is welcome to come along. And we provide a report with recommendations and also the trial of stimulant medication for those who are eligible. And I suppose the eligibility around stimulant medication is obviously dependent upon getting a diagnosis, but particularly in this population of quite severe needs, there's sometimes some things, unfortunately, that go along with the ADHD that actually actively block them from getting the treatments because, you know, things like comorbid substance use and, you know, a recent psychosis that, you know, may have been induced by stimulants in the past. So there's a couple of things that actually, unfortunately, come with the territory in this group that actually block them from treatment, which is a really tricky thing to negotiate with people. But at least even in those cases, we provide diagnostic clarity and we say to them, you know, if these things improve in the future, then you're one step closer. At least you know where you stand diagnosis-wise. But it's not an ideal situation by any means. So in terms of the psychiatry assessment, this is the area obviously I'm a bit less knowledgeable about, but general psychiatric history, including an assessment of ADHD symptoms with reference to the DSM-5, special attention paid to whether or not there's a family history of ADHD, other neurodevelopmental disorders as well, such as ASD, Tourette's and learning disorders. And Davinder put in here to note that certain non-specific symptoms, like the affective instability, can either be comorbid with ADHD or they can be a confounding differential diagnosis. So that's a little bit of a tricky one, diagnosis-wise. And I've put here differential diagnosis and comorbidity, but I suppose one of the really tricky things in ADHD is that the list of differentials is actually really similar to the list of comorbidities. So things like EUPD and complex PTSD. I suppose I've been reflecting during today's talks about, you know, the link with emotion regulation difficulties and, you know, people with those conditions having that pervasive dysregulation. As I say, that can be a confound as a differential diagnosis, but it could also be a comorbidity. Things like bipolar, major depressive disorder, dysthymia, anxiety disorders. The list sort of goes on. ASD is obviously a really important one to mention, which can go along with ADHD or be an alternative to it. And on my side of things as well, being sure to know whether we're looking at perhaps an intellectual disability, that's happened once or twice. Also whether there may be a specific learning disorder that may sort of offer an alternative explanation to ADHD in terms of why the person struggled so much in school, or as we know, it's very likely to be comorbid with ADHD. So as I alluded to before, in terms of trying to distinguish differential diagnoses and comorbidities, we try and look at the trajectory, and that's where the collateral is so helpful. In terms of the neuropsychology assessment, we do. I try and do a brief symptom-focused interview as an adjunct to what the psychiatrist is doing. It's quite nice knowing that somebody else is doing that full history, but it can sometimes make it difficult to know which bits I need to cover. I try and focus on the neuropsychology bit, like things like aspects of executive functioning and how they got on with school and things like that. Now, just briefly, because this is all in the slides, but questionnaires we use, the Connors, we use the brief, which is great in terms of executive function, and we use the DAS just as a broad-based mental health screen. Psychometrics-wise, we use the Wechsler tests in terms of general intellectual ability, but also for academic skills, and we do various measures of sustained and selective attention, executive function, learning and memory. And I've just put at the bottom that there's no single neuropsychological feature that's a kind of catch-all that says, if you have this, then it's definitely ADHD, or if you have ADHD, then you'll definitely have this feature. But it's really helpful to look at these things as an aid to diagnosis, but also looking at patterns of impairment and areas where they're going to need to focus their attention in terms of improving things. And also, even to look at things like academic function is super helpful, because, you know, just providing some validation that, okay, yeah, you know, there's some quite significant challenges with literacy or maths, and, you know, these are things that you're going to need a bit of help with moving forward. Now, I've got just a couple more slides. I'm aware of time, so I'm going to focus a little bit on the medical side of the treatment. That's been covered in a really illuminating detail in our first talk today, so I won't go over it in too much detail, but Dr. Hans follows a pretty standard and well-evidence-based protocol in terms of the treatments that he tries first, and how he titrates the dose, and how he proceeds if they're not responding. And we'd like to do a case series in this population to look at patterns of functional impairment and how that goes over time in the cases where we've provided treatment and when we haven't provided treatment. So we're also going to be starting a group treatment in a couple of months, which is focused on executive function skills. We're not calling that, we're calling it a getting things done group. You don't have to be one of our patients to access the group. It's for those with the youth mental health teams as well. And it's based on an excellent book by Mary Salanto, CBT for Adult ADHD. And it's a manualized treatment that we're just taking the first half of that treatment, focusing on time management, prioritization, and getting things done, getting started with things, rewarding yourself. And I'd like to have a little bit of a look at self-compassion, again, inspired by some of the talks that we've had today. So that's where we are in terms of psychosocial treatments. And then I've just got a final slide in terms of challenges and opportunities. So we are a small team. I feel very privileged that we're able to offer this service in the public sector, but it has meant that we've had to think really carefully about our criteria for acceptance into the service, and then also what we provide once they're accepted to the service. It is a highly complex client group, and so diagnostically that presents really special challenges, but it's also very interesting, and it's an opportunity to provide a service, hopefully, to people that really need it. And that brings me onto the issue around prescribing in public health. And we have set that 12-month kind of trial period for prescribing. We've had a little bit of pushback from that, from people who think, well, you're starting people off on medication, which, you know, what's to say they're going to be able to continue after that 12 months? And it's sort of one of those things where if we tried to sort of provide it for 5 years, we'd probably end up in a position where we can't provide it to anyone. And the other thing about that is we've actually got a talk on Tuesday from people who operate the no interest loan scheme, and they're helping us think with our clients about how they can actually save up for the treatment or even pay it off after they've had the treatment. So that's everything I wanted to cover, and thanks very much for listening.